Hello, and welcome to the Project Elected podcast. Project Elect is a nonpartisan nonprofit whose goal is pretty simple. We want to get more Latter-day Saint women involved in public service. On this podcast, we interview amazing Latter-day Saint women who are involved in public service. Hi, my name is Audrey Perry Martin. I'm the founder of Project Elect and the host of this podcast.
I am excited to introduce our guest today. Candace Anderson is with us. She serves on the Contra Costa Board of Supervisors. She's over District 2. And Candace, I've known for a while. We served together on the Women in Law Committee for J. Raymond Clark Law Society. And we'll probably talk about that a little bit soon. But I wanted Candace to tell you her story. I've heard it before. It's so inspiring. She just has a fantastic way of putting it. So I'm really excited to talk to her today. Candace, thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure. It's always great to see you, Audrey.
Would you introduce yourself and tell me a little bit about your story, your current position, and the path you took to get here?
Okay. It's a very long story because I'm getting old. But essentially, it goes back to growing up in Hawaii. And when I was a 16-year-old girl, I was down at the legislature with my mother one day. And my mother was very involved in local government, in working to really testify to help bills be the way they are. And I remember as a 16-year-old sitting there and hearing some very articulate women espouse why they thought a law should pass, which was completely counter to my viewpoint and to the one that my mother was there for. And I remember sitting there on the floor, this is Hawaii where you can sit on the floor in a hearing, thinking, why aren't there more women there representing my values? And that was just one of those little epiphanies, moments in time. I went off to BYU as a music major and quickly realized there were far better musicians than myself at BYU. And at the same time, took a political science class and I was hooked. And I switched my major to public policy, graduated from BYU, engaged to be married, brought my fiance back to Hawaii, and I called off the wedding. It was just a couple months before. I just thought, this isn't the right person. This isn't the right time. I had planned to go back to BYU and get a master's in public policy while my then fiance was going to graduate. I suddenly was thinking, what am I going to do at this moment? And my father, who's an attorney, said, you know, you've thought about law school. Maybe you should take the LSAT. So June of 1982, I took the LSAT, and BYU's law school, the J. Raymond Clark Law School at the time, really didn't have a lot of women, as many as they do today, fortunately. And so BYU considered a very, very late application to law school. And instead of getting married in June, I took the LSAT and started law school in August. Graduated from law school, ended up meeting a wonderful man who I'm married to today, practiced law in Hawaii as a prosecuting attorney, and then we moved to the mainland, as we call it, to California, and hadn't planned to practice law. But after I passed the bar, my Stake Relief Society president, the woman who was the leadership for the women of our area, came to me and said, what are you going to do now? And I said, I have two little boys. I'm going to stay home with them. And she said, I want you to meet this lawyer in the little town of Morgan Hill. You two would connect. And I said, but I don't want a job. And she said, go meet Craig. I think you'd like him. And so I met Craig, said, I don't need a job, but started working for him part-time. We moved to Morgan Hill. And by the time my fourth child was born, and this is where this long story is going, I realized I really didn't want to be even practicing law part-time while I was raising children. Ultimately, I ended up having six children. After my fourth child was born, I just said, this is it. I'm going to stop for a while. And then I thought, I have time on my hands. It's time on my hands with four children under the age of six. But and I one night I was turned on the TV, and this is 1991. There's not a lot on TV back then. And unless you had a very large satellite dish in your backyard, we did not. And I saw Morgan Hill had a city channel, and they were scrolling very slowly civic announcements. And they mentioned that they had an opening on their Parks Commission, and they had an opening on their Rent Stabilization Commission, rent control for a mobile home park. And I thought, you know what? I'm an attorney. I've got this degree in public policy. Being on a commission one night a month, that would work well with my family. My husband could be home taking care of the kids. And so I took the double stroller down to City Hall, filled out applications. And then I heard nothing, just complete silence. No one called me up and said, hey, come on in for an interview or thank you for applying. Nothing. And I just thought, I've got my hands full. This is okay. And colicky baby few weeks later, turned on the TV and the city council was in session. And I thought, well, I wonder what they're up to tonight. Now, I realize most people probably would, that would not be their first thought. It would be what else is on TV? But I thought, yeah, maybe there's something interesting the council is considering. And the moment I turned my channel to that, I heard them say, and now we have an opening on the Parks Commission. And someone said, I move that we appoint Candace Anderson to the Parks Commission. And I thought, this is so strange. And then someone else said, but we just put her on the Rent Stabilization Commission. Do you think she'd serve on both? And the council members who had met me said, oh, well, I met her and she seems like the kind of gal that wants to roll up her sleeves and get involved. I think we should appoint her to both. And so that's how I really entered local government and served on those two commissions. It was a very difficult time in California's economy. Our Parks Commission ultimately had to disband. And then one of the city council members in Morgan Hill moved away. He was moving back east. And so there was going to be an appointment process. The four sitting council members were going to interview applicants, choose someone. Because of my work on the commission, they knew me a little, and that helped. But I filled out an application. And at this time, hey, my kids were ages 2, 4, 6, and 8. Things were much easier at home. And with great discussion with my husband about, hey, can we pull this off? I went ahead and applied. I always say I was the least objectionable candidate. And there I was suddenly on the Morgan Hill City Council and enjoyed that immensely. I was all ready to run after I finished out the 2 years of the term I was ending. And right around that time, my husband got a really great job offer that would move us a little bit further into the East San Francisco Bay Area, back to Danville, where my husband had grown up and from the time he was 12 and older. And it was one of those challenges, sort of mom's political career, if we stayed in Morgan Hill, or a really amazing community to raise our children. And we opted for the amazing place to raise our children. And I just felt really inside, very satisfied, time to come home for a while. And I had another child, and then I had another child. And so with 6 children, I just rolled up my sleeves, got involved in the community. And I always say to people, you don't have to be the mayor, you don't have to be on the city council to make a difference where you are. You just help where you're needed. And so from the moment I arrived, I was involved in Cub Scouts and Girl Scouts and school site councils and PTA councils. And when my youngest was then starting kindergarten, my oldest was headed off to BYU. And my husband was the bishop of our congregation. For those not of our faith, it's like a pastor over the congregation. There was an opening on Danville's city council. One of the council members had been promoted to the board of supervisors by the governor. And I looked at that and I thought, huh, that's interesting. But it was my husband who came in, threw the newspaper down on the bed on a summer morning and said, you should do this, where the headline said, town council to accept applications. I said, no, you're bishop. I need to be the support of bishop's wife and help you out. He said, no, I'm really bishop, not just of the people who show up on our ward list, on the ward roster, but really of the whole community within our boundaries. You should do this. And so once again, I applied. Once again, I was the least objectionable candidate. And so in 2003, joined Danville's town council. And then in 2004, in an 2008, I did need to run. I was successfully ran, and I had the opportunity to be mayor of Danville. It's a wonderful town, city of about 43,000 people. And I had planned to run again in 2012. I was also at a point where my youngest two were now entering high school, had more time on my hands, and was seriously contemplating, should I go back to practicing law? I loved being a prosecutor. I'd enjoyed the civil practice I had done down in Morgan Hill. But suddenly, the county supervisor in Contra Costa had developed cancer, and she announced she wasn't running. And I served with her on several boards. And my first thought is, oh, there's already a woman who's running for the seat. Isn't that fortunate for her? This will be easy for her to win. But people started texting me, emailing me, calling me up saying, look at this seat. You would be really good at this. And my first thought is, no, it's too hard. I can't do that. You know, when I ran for town council, I could raise $10,000 to $15,000. I could print out my own Microsoft Publisher door hangers. I could send out a joint mailer. It was a pretty simple thing to do on your own. But when I sat down and did the back of the envelope calculation with my oldest son, who at the time was working for Google and in their marketing department of how could we market me? How could we do this? I realized I had to raise at least $100,000, and that was daunting. So bottom line, I ran. It was a very heated race with this woman who was already in the race. I was attacked in large part because of who I was, a Mormon woman, mother of six, who didn't necessarily have the same pro-choice perspective that my opponent did. At the time, the issue of same-sex marriage was pending before the U.S. Supreme Court. And while I had been very vocally supportive of same-sex partner benefits, like the majority of California, I had supported Prop 8, and which had passed in the state, which also put a little bit of a target on my back. I won. There was a third candidate in a three-way race. I won with 60% of the vote in the June primary, which meant I did not have to go on to general election. And then fortunately, in 2016 and 2020, I've run unopposed. So here I am. And that's the long story. Sorry to take up so much time, Audrey, but that's how I ended up doing what I'm doing today.
I love that story because it shows how incredible you are, that you did all of these things while raising six children, and you don't give yourself enough credit. You said you were the least objectionable candidate. I'm sure that's not why. I'm sure they took a look at you and saw everything you'd done and said, this woman will get things done. She's the one we need. So that's fantastic. And what a great story. I love it. What are some of the things that you've been able to accomplish as an elected official that you're proud of?
It's interesting what you can do on so many levels. And I go back to Morgan Hill, you know, this little town in southern Santa Clara County, where one of the first issues within 2 weeks was a consortium of people wanting to turn the Golden Oak restaurant, a family restaurant, into a gambling casino, into a big card table. And suddenly I'm sitting on the dais after being on there for 2 weeks thinking, oh, that's why I'm here. And you don't stand up and say, I don't believe in gambling and therefore you cannot have it. You really need to look at, you know, what are the issues behind it? And using my lawyer training, I called up the police chief of San Jose where they had card rooms, said, help me understand these issues. Ultimately, the way it was resolved, instead of a gambling casino coming in, we built a beautiful soccer park across the street. And it's one that's used by all over Northern California. Soccer park went in, wasn't really compatible with that. So that was one issue. In Danville, much of what you do on a city level in California is you're really focused on planning, land use, and preserving open space. So we have a hillside ordinance in Danville that has preserved our hillsides, where you allow people to cluster their development, but you allow 200, 300 acres to be open space that might be used for hiking trails. Creating historic buildings. We had a wonderful veterans building in downtown that was built in the 1920s, but was sadly in disrepair. Bought the building from the county for a dollar, and then spent $8 million creating a place for our veterans to gather. And the front wing of the building is exactly as what it looked like over 100 years ago, but it has an elevator and it has meeting rooms and a kitchen for the veterans. And then the rear wing of the building we took down and put in a place for a senior center. So you're able to make a difference on the city level. You're able to set policies to keep your community safe, to enhance the quality of life for people. And I love that in city government. And then county, you get to take things to a whole new level. And that's where you, in California particularly, you are the safety net. And so I have about a $4.3 billion budget that I oversee. Contra Costa County has about 1.1 million people. And so you're there for the homeless services. You're there for the mental health, behavioral health services, the jails, the district attorney, the public defender, just under 10,000 county employees. And something that I have really focused on is those with mental illness. And shortly after I took office in 2012, a beautiful woman in her 70s named Melinda Doherty walked into my office and she said, we need Laura's Law. And I said, well, what's Laura's Law? And she said, it's a law in California that will allow a county, if they adopt this measure, when somebody is an adult over 18 who has a diagnosed serious mental illness, has been hospitalized or incarcerated more than two times and continues to pose a danger to themselves or to others, but refuses treatment, you can bring them before a judge after offering assisted outpatient treatment services. And she's shared her story. Her son, who was in his late 30s, and her father lived in the Central Valley of California, the day after Christmas had been bludgeoned to death by a next door neighbor. He had a serious mental illness. He had been arrested the year before for an assault, but he was found not fit to stand trial. but just released. And he killed her father and her son. And so it made me realize we needed to do more. And so working with our mental health commission, we did pass Flores Law in our county and did start providing this assisted outpatient treatment. And with that, I've realized that many of those with a mental illness continue to cycle through our jails and homeless shelters because they aren't receiving the supportive treatment, supportive services they need upon release. And so I got our county involved at the national movement called the Stepping Up Initiative. And now I'm focusing on something called Familiar Faces, which is where you're not just looking at statistics, but you're looking at individuals by name and really being able to pull up their records without violating HIPAA. Here's their diagnosis. Here's the services they've had in the past. This is effective. This is not. And so those are really helpful things where you're making a difference and focusing on, we've got a great homeless department that is doing more than just providing housing, but figuring out how to provide the supportive housing and partnering with community-based organizations. And then in the wake of George Floyd, I think one of the biggest challenges that we all saw across this country is, what are alternatives to police in certain situations? And we had several instances in my county where people with a serious mental illness, even when their families had done everything right, introduced their mentally ill family member to the police, saying things can get out of hand. Please help de-escalate them. We had a very sad incident in the city of Walnut Creek where the family had done just that. But one evening when their son was in a very serious episode, police were called, summoned by the family, and they tried to de-escalate it. They tried to use, not guns. Ultimately, they did have to use a gun when they were charged with him holding a metal weapon, and he died. And it made us all, again, be so sad that we didn't have all the tools. And so we've created in my county something called the Anyone, Anytime, Anyplace program as an alternative to police responding in a mental health crisis, where if you can send someone who isn't carrying a gun, but a social worker, a mental health professional, and even paramedics. And so we're slowly getting this rolled out, and we have a crisis line that people can call. So it's not every call is just going to police dispatch. When 911 gets it, they'll send it to the Miles Hall, named after the young man who passed away in Walnut Creek, the Miles Hall Crisis Hub, where their trained dispatchers can figure out, what are we going to do? How are we going to help this person? Those are just a few things. I could talk all day about lots of different issues.
Those are some big, important issues that the whole country is struggling with. It's amazing that you've been able to make a difference in at least your county and your city, and probably served an example to other places as well. So it sounds like you've done a lot of great, good things and helped a lot of people. I wanted to ask you, because we've talked about this before, you and I, about women running for office, and especially women of faith running for office. I know that you encourage women to run for office all the time. What do you hear from them? What reluctance do they have? And how do you help them overcome reluctance to run for office?
I think the first is recognizing you're smarter, you're stronger. You have the skills. If you've volunteered in a community organization, served in a church organization, you've developed some pretty amazing communication skills, organizational skills, the empathy, the ability to analyze issues and solve them. And I think so often women just don't realize they've got that in them, or they think, oh, I've got too many other things to do, too many other people to help. And I think Audrey and I recently attended, or heard, it was a virtual fireside that I attended of a Jewish rabbi who was saying, I used to do things, we of the Jewish faith used to do things because we are Jewish and we were serving other Jews. And now they're saying, now we are serving the world because we are Jewish. We aren't just saying we are helping them because they are Jewish. We are helping them because we are Jewish. And I think as a Latter-day Saint woman, I often think I'm serving the world not because they're all members of my church. In fact, most of them aren't. I'm serving them because I'm a member of a church and I believe in giving back to my community. And so I think that's an important factor. Time, obviously, is a huge factor. And that's where I've said, figure out what you do have time for. Sit down with your husband, if you have one, or your family members and say, how much time could I really commit to the community? And I always encourage people, start out on a city commission or a county commission. You can find them on your city clerk's website or your county clerk's website. find something that you care about, something that you're passionate about, even a school committee. And there you get to know people who ultimately will be your grassroots supporters, people who are not of our faith, who are doing amazing things in the community, and people that you want to get to know because they are good people, and they are people, some of faith, some of not faith, some who are just inherently want the world to be a better place. And so find that passion, apply to be on a commission. Oftentimes, I encourage people, especially if you're in a smaller city, and when I say smaller, under 100,000 people, call up the mayor, say, hey, I'd like to meet you for hot chocolate. I'm joking a little. Most people meet for coffee. And I always say, no, I'll meet you for hot chocolate, but not going to meet you for coffee today, but I'll meet you for that. And just say, what are the needs of your city? How can I be helpful to you? And I would love to get involved. And oftentimes they will be able to share with you a need in the community, a commission, and just that little extra introduction that you've had might help you get appointed. And then it's really figuring out what are the issues you care about. Read your online blogs for your community. Nextdoor can be interesting, but you also learn about a lot of issues. If there's an online newspaper, used to be Patch, used to be all over the place. There's still Patches somewhere. Your local papers, read about the issues, find out who's involved, connect with those. And great to connect with a city council member about an issue they're working on, saying, hey, shoot them an email. They are elected to respond to you. Let me just tell you, as an elected official, don't ever be afraid of reaching out to one. Just say, hey, I really appreciated your vote on the ballpark. My son plays baseball, and you know, reconfiguring the park to add an additional playfield is really going to make a difference in our kids' lives. I will tell you, as an elected official for over 20 years, I get far many more, I hate you, why did you do that? But when I get a nice email from someone just saying, hey, thanks for your vote on that, and it's not tied to, and I want you to do this, but just a pleasantry of, I really appreciate that. Yeah, it means a lot. You think that was really nice of that person to do that. So don't hesitate to do that. Do some training camps. To me, that's really helpful. If you're serious about running for office, there are some fabulous places like Project Elect, you know, podcasts that you can watch, but there are also some really good trainings that you can do for women of your values. And I will say, when I started out back in 1993, when I was on Morgan Hill City Council and I thought I was going to be running for my seat, there were not a lot of training camps for women of my faith or women as conservative as I was. And I consider myself a fairly moderate Republican these days, but even being a Republican, it was just like, yeah, you can come to our Women's Political Caucus training, but we'll never support you because you don't meet our litmus test. And the litmus test used to drive me crazy. In fact, I will tell you, back even when I was in law school, I thought, because I don't fit the pro-choice definition that people have, I could never run for elected office, just because that was such a litmus test back then. For some of the pro-life people, I don't really fit there because it is such a nuanced topic. And what I have to say to people, because I get asked this all the time, is we need to focus on women's health, and we need to focus on the issues that we do agree upon. And that's really when I ran in this very heated election in 2012, where I was being attacked because of my position on issues, because of my faith, because I was a Mormon mother of six, I had to say, we all come from different faiths, from different backgrounds. We bring to the table so many things that are important. Let's focus on what we agree on, not the things that we don't agree on. And same thing, I'm in a nonpartisan office, fortunately, because I do not like partisan politics. I always say a pothole isn't a Democrat or a Republican pothole. It's just a pothole that needs to be filled. Let's focus on these issues and keep partisan politics out of local government as much as possible. So that's some of my pearls of wisdom, things I've learned along the way.
It sounds like you've had to deal with being attacked, and being attacked for your religion, for who you are, for some of your views. How do you deal with that on just like an emotional level and practical level? Because I get that a lot when I talk to women about running, especially how heated everything is right now in politics. They're scared of running because they don't want to be attacked.
You have to develop a very thick skin. That's just the reality, because you are going to be attacked. And there are the sort of stereotypical trolls that are just out there who are ready to attack. And so when I was mayor of Danville and I'd endorsed Proposition 8, when it was on the ballot, there were a lot of people who were angry at me at that time. And so when I announced I was running for county supervisor 4 years later, those same people within seconds, clearly they had me on a Google alert, just started attacking me online saying, she's homophobic. She supported Prop 8 when she was mayor of Danville and all of these other things. And so you have to be ready with the response. You need to be ready to just say, thank you for your comment. Here's where I stand on this issue, and you move on. When my election got pretty heated, I actually had other people who would be really sort of monitoring the blogs for me, because you can internalize it. It can be very emotional. And so you have to say, I'm going to let other people tell me what's being said. I'm going to craft an appropriate response and do it that way. You need to surround yourself with people you trust, who will tell you good or bad what you're doing. And I don't mean politically, it's your kitchen table, as we sometimes call it, where you can bounce issues off them and say, what do you think of this response? How do you feel about this one? Does this make sense? And you also need to surround yourself with people who aren't engaged in politics, who know who you are and know the real person you are, who can say to you, that's not who you are. You're not homophobic. You're not racist. You're not any of those things. You're a caring, good person, and you've got to stay grounded in that regard.
You spouted a lot of wisdom right there. I love that the surrounding yourself with people not in politics as well, because politics can be an echo chamber and you can get lost in it. And that's really good advice. I hadn't heard that before. And then the support group too, and having people look at the blogs for you and having, so you don't have to get the venom right up front.
No, and I will say in one race, I had people who were ready to help respond. When the trolls came out on certain issues, I had a group of people I would just send an email out to saying, hey, I'm being attacked on this issue. Here are the facts of this issue. And oftentimes, then they would respond accordingly and they would provide their insight into it. There's a lot of tactical things that can take place. When you're a politician, people are coming up to you saying, oh, you are so great. Oh, you do such a good job. And oh, we love your position on this. And when you start thinking, oh, I am so great, I am doing all these things, that's when you fall. And that's where a lot of politicians have made missteps, whether it be through campaign finance, whether it be through other actions they took that were not who they truly were, but they began to just believe these accolades. So I'm staying grounded. Having children does a really good job of that for you. They will be brutally honest. They will give you the perspective that you really need many times over.
That is the truth. Gotta love the truth from children's mouths, right? So getting your family involved, let's talk a little bit about that, because you had six kids and you were running for office throughout having six kids. How did that work? How did your family support you? How did your kids and your husband feel about it?
That's a really good question, because that is one of the things you need to navigate. And when I was in Morgan Hill, my husband was working in San Jose, so he had about a 45-minute commute. And so there was often a two-hour gap of when I needed to be at a city council meeting once a week or every other week. And I just had a great network of friends who would support, could take my children. I had some great babysitters who would come in. And so there was the logistics. But there's also the opportunity to really get the family involved. And one of the things I did in Morgan Hill, we were, as I mentioned, in a California state budget crisis, which impacted the city greatly. We had really had to reduce parks maintenance. And so I started doing a monthly spruce up the park day, where we would go around to a different city park, invite the community to show up with their rakes and their tree pruners. I would bring sodas and I would bring my whole family. And so I had these cute little four children at the time, ages 2, 4, 6, and 8, out there helping paint walls, fences, pulling weeds. And when my second son applied to law school, he talked about in his law school application how meaningful that was to him as a six-year-old little boy to be out helping the community with his mom, making a difference. So I've always tried to get my children very much involved. And I joined the Danville Town Council, which was in 2003. At that time, my children were a little bit older, but they almost needed me more. And that's a reality. As your children grow up, you realize middle school, high school, they need a mom even more than they did when they were little. And so I just carved out time. And I just said to the schedulers at the city, the town of Danville, I just said, I don't want anything scheduled between 3 and 6 unless it's absolutely necessary. That's my sacred cow time with my family. I want to be home. I want to be in the kitchen when they walk in the door. I want to pick up their carpools. And occasionally meetings would come up and I would work something out with friends and others. But that to me was important to have my children know that they were my number one priority and that what was going on in their lives was more important to me than anything that was going on in the city. And I still remember my daughter Melanie had this real crisis when I was being installed as mayor. Now, this was 2008. She was a senior in high school. And the whole family was coming to my mayoral installation. And it was a kind of a long, boring 2 hours civic awards event where I would be installed as mayor. But all of my kids were going to be there. My parents had flown in from Hawaii. The night before, one of her best friends called her up and she said, "You won't believe it. My dad has third row tickets for the Spice Girls. Do you want to come?" And so she came to me and said, "Mom, Jenny's dad just got Spice Girl tickets for the same night as you're being installed as mayor. What do I do?" And I said, you get to decide. If you want to go to the Spice Girls, I totally understand. This is something you get to decide." And she just, for 2 hours, just went back and forth and just said, "This is so hard. I don't know what to do." I said, "This is what happens when you're an adult. They're hard decisions." Ultimately, she came to my mayoral installation, and her friends the next day were like, "Why would you do that?" And she just said, "My mom's always been there for me. I'm going to be there for my mom." And it melted my heart. I think now as a 34-year-old, she's probably thinking, "Wait, why did I do that?" But again, for her, it was important to be there with her mom on that day. And I really appreciated the sacrifice that she made. And I look back at the family picture taken that night with all 6 of my kids being there. And I thought, this wasn't easy for them. They had to sit through a long, boring meeting, but they were there supporting their mom. And you know, when I would run, they would go do door hangers for me. They would interact with people out in the public. And when I ran for my big race in 2012, as I mentioned, my son was working for Google at the time, got permission from his manager to help me run my campaign. And so we had an amazing digital campaign, which was one of the first in the county. He built me a terrific website. He looked at the time at Barack Obama's website, Mitt Romney's website, combined the two to create this fabulous website to the point where I had a reporter contacting me because campaign finance, you have to report when you spend more than $1,000 in your race. And I was putting off filing until January. But in December, my son built this website for me for $200, the cost of the website. And I had this reporter, "Why haven't you filed your forms? Clearly, people are looking at this saying this is at least a $15,000, $20,000 website. And I just said, "That's the beauty of having 6 kids. One of them is going to be good at something." And so it was, I very much got them involved. But at the same time, I tried to let them be themselves and not have to live in the shadow of being the son of the mayor or the daughter of the county supervisor, and really try to let them choose how involved they wanted to be in the community. Loved to have them at events with me, but I never mandated, "You stand next to mommy when we're at this ribbon cutting." They needed to be themselves. They needed to grow and develop and know that I was supporting them in the individuals they were turning out to be.
That's incredible. And what a gift to your children to instill in them this knowledge of how important service and public and community service is. And sounds like they were learning that at a really young age. So that's amazing. That's one thing when I talk to women who have kids who have been running for office and getting their kids involved, that's one thing I hear over and over again, that their kids really stepped up and wanted to help and actually gained a lot from it. I wanted to ask you if you had an invitation for our listeners, something that maybe they could do right away to get involved in public service, a step they could take towards reaching that goal.
I would say, think about what your passion is and start looking around and seeing where you might get a little involved. And it might be, like I said, going to your city or county website, look at a commission, or it might be looking at nonprofits in the community who are doing work that you think is important, whether it be literacy, whether it be supporting our immigrant population and our refugees, whether it be helping out in schools and other things. Start figuring out what can you do outside your normal sphere, and how might that also help you as you go move forward and look at opportunities to apply or run for office. And I would say also identify one new periodical, one new online blog or online newspaper in your community that will give you a little bit more insight into what's going on. And then finally, sign up. Every city lets you sign up for an e-blast that they send out or for announcements. Sign up for that. And then it will just show up in your inbox, opportunities that are coming up, press releases about events taking place. And then if you don't know who your city council members are, figure that out today. Just figure out by name who they are, learn a little bit about them, what you might have in common, and maybe think about which of these might I want to approach and find out how I might be a little more involved.
Thank you so much, Candace. I don't want to forget also to talk a little bit about women in law. So I want to give that a little plug too. For now, you're the chair this year.
Yes, I'm the chair. The International J. Reuben Clark Law Society, an organization that really promotes everything from religious freedom to integrity in the law. And it's something where we do have a fabulous Women in Law chapter in each of our cities for the most part, not all of them, but with the whole International Law Committee, that's where I get to serve. And so we've been putting on some really fun webinars, and Audrey's helped me out with one a few months ago, and we're looking forward to perhaps doing another one, talking a little bit more about appointments and elections to office. But if you happen to be a lawyer in particular, reach out to Audrey or myself, and I'm certainly encouraging Audrey to put my contact information out there. Or if you're thinking about running for office, I'm really always happy to talk to people about it and talk through what you're thinking, your experience, and offer you any advice I can.
Thank you so much, Candace. You're fantastic as always. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me today.
My pleasure. And I look forward to seeing you soon.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you all for listening to Project Elected podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to projectelectwomen.org. We're also on Instagram and Facebook as Project Elect Women. We'd love for you to subscribe, rate us, or give us a review on iTunes. So until next time, thank you.